What is up, everyone? Thanks for joining us for episode 102 of the Gamecast. I am one of your hosts, Kenny, and with me is Tess.
Hello, everybody.
And we have a special guest today with us, Steven Spahn, who's from Able Gamers, is going to join us today and to talk about a bunch of cool things. But before we get into that, typically what we do is we have our brief moment where we talk about video games and stuff like that. Our recommendations for the week, you know, what we've seen, played, experienced, and I had a really good time playing Returnal this week. And I know I'm late. I know that came out like years ago for the PS5, but it's on PC now and I got to play it. And it's pretty great. I beat it in, I think, 10 hours, which is pretty cool.
Okay.
Cool. I'm a fan of shoot 'em ups, so it wasn't, not to toot my own horn, but it wasn't that difficult. I guess there's no way to not do sound like a jerk saying that, but yeah, it wasn't as difficult as I thought. And I had a really good time playing it. And so if you haven't played it, check it out on PC. If you don't have a PS5, if you weren't able to get a PS5, like a lot of us, and a lot of the bugs apparently have been fixed. I'd had no issues, no crashes, anything like that. So definitely go check that out. I also got to watch, I think it has been a few weeks since we've potted. I got to see John Wick 4, and that was John Wick. If you like John Wick and all the action and stuff that he does, you will like this film. I enjoyed it. It is exhausting, just like the last one, and over the top in all the best ways. But yeah, definitely go check that out. If you're a fan, if you're not, you're not going to like it. If you didn't like the other ones, you are not going to like this film. Trust me. But it was pretty good. Tess, what about you? What have you been doing this past
week? Honestly, I've been doing something I really shouldn't be doing. And I was talking to one of my best friends about it the other day, and just say it like this. She said to me, clearly the creators and the writers of this show didn't put any energy into it. So I don't know why you are. Because I was putting a lot of my energy into explaining why Yashahime is one of the worst shows to ever exist. I took energy to actually watch the second season, and I didn't even watch all of it because it was basically another Rings of Power. It was so bad. And I'm just like, I don't understand why they did this. They are literally destroying my favorite character. Everybody knows Hermione's father is Sesshomaru. And really, it checked out because the way that he abandoned his children that literally were just birthed, dropped him off in the woods and said, deuces, Godspeed. It really checks out because I haven't seen him since I got her.
So terrible.
I'm just saying that it's a terrible show and it gave me multiple migraines. I might sound raspy because I was screaming at the television, and I have to say why I was screaming. And I was screaming because they didn't even try hard in making Rin like look bigger. You know how small she is in the original show? And now that, you know, I don't know, 14 years have passed and apparently she's his wife now, she still looks small. And I'm like, I just want to Earl every time. I'm just like, get away from each other, please. Just.
But you already knew that was going to, you knew that was a rough watch. Like, you went in knowing that this would be a bad idea. And you did it anyways.
Well, post brain injury, I don't trust any of my decisions. I have horrible, horrible decision-making skills. This is clearly one of them because I could have taken up knitting. I could have worked harder on my resume or something. And I chose to put hours into wondering why they were like using plot armor and devices every turn of the way, throwing in new vocabulary for us to learn, throwing in new characters, and then trying to modify things that we all knew were BS because they got complaints on the first season and just like sprinkled them into the second season. I'm like, I'm okay.
And Steven, what about you? What have you been up to?
I don't even know how you follow that. Nothing has made me that angry. Oh my.
You're very passionate.
I have been haven't had a lot of time for a lot of games recently, but when I've had some time, a friend of mine gave me a code to Crime Boss on Epic, and it was an interesting game. Cool. It's got some language I don't particularly like, and there's definitely some stereotyping in the game, but it's got something weird in it that I like, that I'm hoping the game industry like captures and tries. It does an FPS RPG. It really is this kind of weird roguelite where it is a shoot 'em up and you are just murdering random people because you can murder them. But as you fail, and you do fail often, you get cards which make your characters and your allies more beefed up and able to handle scenarios. So it very much like reminds me of like a Dead Cells in an FPS, and it's not something that I've seen done before. And so I'm kind of hoping like some other devs see that and go, "Oh, that's cool," and then maybe kind of adapt that out. It's definitely trying something that tries to play on nostalgia from the olden days, and for anybody who's like over 45, they're going to love that game. But it's fun, but it's got some cool new elements, and I think I don't know about y'all, but I feel like I've been in the game industry long enough now that like anytime something new comes along that hasn't been tried before, I'm all like, okay, I'd like to see more of this, because like we do the same game over and over and over a lot, so I'd like to see something a little different.
Yeah
I think that's why Elden Ring took over like everything for a little while, because it was similar but different with how they did their open world, and it was like an event because people were talking about it nonstop on Twitter. Some good, some bad, and we'll get to some of the bad a little bit later here, but anytime something new, even if it doesn't work out, like if the video game isn't as good as we had hoped, if someone else sees it, like, you know what, I can really do something with that cool idea, then maybe we'll get like a new genre or sorts. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm definitely with that. We are glad to have you here today, to talk about Able Gamers. And what's interesting is that I didn't know about Able Gamers until I got on Twitter. Twitter, as much as of a mess it is, it's actually a really good tool at times. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to learn a little bit more. And I think it's partially because, and I think a lot of us kind of have this issue where if something is not readily affecting us, we don't necessarily see it right away.
Yeah.
And so because of that, it's like, oh, I didn't know there was a, not that there wasn't a need, but there wasn't like a company that's out here doing the things that Able Gamers does, and that they have, these partnerships and things like that. And I'm like, oh, this is really cool. So then I started following and I followed you on Twitter, and I started seeing all these different things. And I was like, oh, this is very interesting. Things that you're doing in order to make video games more accessible to everyone who wants to play, which is a big deal. For us, maybe not in terms of physical ability, but essentially, being a minority or whatever, like, oh, more of us get to play. It's one of the reasons why we champion the Game Pass. And so I was like, oh, I really wanted to get, Steven on the podcast. And recently, you did a call out about Able Gamers, a gala that's coming out. Mm-hmm. Or a gala that's happening later this month. And so we're like, oh, this is a perfect time to, have you on. And so, but before we get to that, though, I was wondering if you could kind of give us a brief history of Able Gamers. Like, how did it come to be? And, for the people who out there who might not know what Able Gamers is.
Yeah, well, thing is, Able Gamers has been around for a while, but it's one of those overnight successes kind of things where people have been paying more and more attention to disabled people in the last 5 or 6 years than maybe the previous decade before that, or five. And it's been a combination of the industry maturing and coming along to the realization that it needed to be a thing, but it took a lot of pushing. So a little over 17 years ago or so now, I have to actually look up the date. It's been so long. It's been decades of my life at this point. where we've been pushing the game industry slowly but surely. It started out with just Mark Barlet, who's the founder of Able Gamers, having this vision for a place where people with disabilities could go and learn information on how they can game better, and almost like a repository of information. and kind of evolved from there into this juggernaut beast that Able Gamers is today, where it's an international charity, one of the biggest front runners for people with disabilities in video gaming anywhere there is. And it's through a combination of focusing on player experiences. So it's not like we're out there telling developers that, you know, well, you need easy mode, you need remapping, you need, you know, captioning, which are all things that we'll have conversations about and when they're appropriate and when they're not. But we basically say, you're the developers. We're not here to tell you how to develop. We're here to tell you these are the challenges that people mm-hmm. with disabilities face. These are the things that are difficult, and these are the things that help alleviate those problems. Now, take that information and turn it into a usable product. Turn it into something that's baked directly into your video game, and those who don't need those options will not mind that they're there, and those who do need them will be grateful that they happen to be there.
That's awesome.
Thank you for that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's hard. There is, unfortunately for me, no elevator pitch for Able Gamers, but whether it's helping, you know, developers figure out how to develop more successfully or helping where we were one of the consulting charities on the Xbox Adaptive Controller, the PlayStation Adaptive Controller, mm-hmm. or, you know, whether it's reaching out to individuals. We've helped, you know, thousands of people every year to get into playing video games, no matter what their disability is. And, you know, that's all thanks to donor money. The donors pay for people who otherwise could not afford it. So for those of you who may not be aware of how bad it is, for people with disabilities, it's usually that the government wants you to stay below the poverty line. You have to choose often between medicine and food. And in some cases, you're not even allowed to earn money, or else the government will take away your, you know, medical benefits, which, you know, if you're someone like myself who has a ventilator, these things are expensive. I cannot afford one. So, you know, unless anybody out there happens to have a spare $500,000 just lying around, you know, if you do, email me. But otherwise, you know, it's where you need the insurance. And so affording a simple thing like, you know, a $90 controller seems to a lot of people like, oh, it's just a controller. But to somebody, it might be life-changing. It might be like, I can finally access these worlds that I've been wanting to play. I might be able to play with my sister, brother, mother. I might be able to play with my friends, finally. They've been talking about this game forever, and now I can finally participate. And so it's really not just about gaming. It's about the people. It's about the lives.
That is actual and factual. Agreed. Good to hear that, though. It is really nice to hear somebody talk about that and be able to say it the way it needs to be said. I think that most people who are not affected in their lives at all by any disability don't seem to understand everything that you just said. There's a lot of people who don't, they might be gamers, and then in their minds, they don't even think that people with disabilities play games or are interested in playing games at all. Mm-hmm. So I just think that there's just a part of the world of people who are abled, who maybe just don't seem, they're not, because it's not in their life, they're, you know, they don't think about it. And so I think that obviously this organization is doing a lot of great work, and it kind of touches me in a way, because I do understand that being disabled is a field that people can go in and out of. Some people are born with disabilities, some people gain disabilities later on in life. And you know, since I went through my own issue, and we've discussed this on the pod multiple times, I was actually really excited when Kenny said he wanted to bring you on to talk. So again, thank you for being here.
No, I appreciate the kind words. I'm just mm-hmm. out there trying to do my thing. You know, it's interesting. We haven't got to introduce ourselves to each other very well yet, but just from the little bit we did in the green screen area, you know, I mm-hmm. can tell that you all have experiences and I have experiences that not everybody does. And I think mm-hmm. those kind of perspectives are important to share with the world. You know, when mm-hmm. you're talking about an injury or a disability from birth, or you're talking about a life circumstance that makes life a little different for you than everyone else. I think it's really important to share those perspectives, because as you said, it sounds silly. It sounds like, well, of course there's disabled people, but there are a number of people that I have encountered and gone up against sometimes in hostile situations where they are just, you know, convinced that disabled people either don't play games or shouldn't be playing games, because mm-hmm. there must be something more important that they could be doing with their lives, like miraculously getting better or something. I don't know. So, you know, I tried to get good at walking for years. Hasn't happened yet. So,
like, oh, but did you try? You know?
No, but I have not put in the hours. As Ninja would tell me, I did not do enough work. And if I wanted it, it would have happened by now.
Terrible. Terrible. Well, that actually brings me to one of my questions. Because, you know, you and others like you who are in this field, shout out to Grant Stoner, who's written some great articles about this topic. You've made some impactful changes on the gaming industry. And some of that, as you say, it's been a struggle. It's been kind of tough, especially just getting people to understand what it is that we're talking about. Because as soon as someone says, you know, that there's an option that people can tick off or on, everyone's like, oh, you're forcing this. You're forcing the developers to change something. And it's really just a suggestion. It's not something set in stone where if you're doing this, you're breaking some type of rule or whatever the case may be. So with that being said, initially starting out, what were some of the struggles that, you know, Able Gamers and yourself might have faced getting folks, whether it be the media, developers, to kind of care more about accessibility, and how do they differ from, you know, what you might face today?
You know, it's interesting in that everything sort of has a domino effect, in that when we started out doing this, there was not a lot of noise around accessibility, and there were not advocates. I was one of the first out there being extremely visible, being an advocate for being disabled and playing video games. There were some other people who had done things like make petitions to make remappable controls a thing. I mean, that's something that people forget is, like, a decade ago, there literally was a disabled person who had to make a petition to get the industry to even care about making remappable controls. And now, if the game doesn't have a remappable controls, able-bodied people are like, oh, no, you did not put out that video game without remappable controls. You know,
right.
As if it's an affront to them personally. And it's like, well, okay, a decade ago we were begging you to do that because we couldn't play otherwise. But okay, now it's a thing. All right, got it. So, you know, it's interesting to me how the industry kind of flips and society kind of just eventually just goes with things and then adopts them as if it's always been. And that's kind of what accessibility is coming to now is, you know, back then it was fighting. For example, on the floor of one of the very first PAX East, I was out there with my founder, Mark Varley. We were going around to different booths and trying to make friends. We didn't know developers back then at all. And so we had to make introductions and had to make a game plan, how to introduce ourselves. We came up with this cool little flyer that talks about, hey, there's millions of people who need adaptations in games and don't you want their money, and like really trying to sell to the bottom line. And we came up to the 2K booth up for Rockstar, and we handed the flyer to the person out in front, and they were like, oh, you need to talk to our head developer person because they, you know, they're the ones that can make these kind of changes. We're like, okay, great. So a dude comes out, stands next to me, but talks over me, like literally like talking over top of my head to the able-bodied person, Mark, who was actually disabled, who is invisibly disabled. So he just looks right over me, talks to Mark, says, hey, you know, I'm so-and-so, what can I help you with? Mark, you know, hands him the flyer and says, hey, you know, Steve and I here are looking for, you know, people to talk to you about accessibility. It's really great. Gives the whole, like, you know, minute and a half spiel. And dude just, you know, completely ignores I'm there and talks to Mark, and then says, okay, thanks, I'll get back to you, and then walks away, but doesn't realize we can still see him as he's walking away, crumples up the flyer, throws it in the trash can, and walks behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, wow, that's amazing. So you were talking about the power of Twitter. I was one of the early adopters of that power back in the Ashton Kutcher trying to get it going days. And so I complained about it on Twitter. And Twitter does what Twitter does best and amplified it to the point that Mark got a call at midnight from the head of 2K going, hey, I heard this happened. I'm so sorry. I can't believe that one of our people treated you like that. How do I make this right? And about a month later, we were one of the few people who were invited out to Rockstar Games headquarters in New York. to go and talk about video gaming and accessibility. We were actually there when Max Payne was turning gold, so it was a busy day for them, but they still entertained us. And
we tried to
help them as best we could. But that is kind of the struggles that we faced back then. So now a lot of advocacy is online. You see various journalists doing their thing and talking about things online. You see people out there who are being representation, you know, like Steve Saylor out there going out and working with Twitch and being on the front page and getting eyeballs on there. And a lot of those things are now how we fight. We fight as a team. Now, we're all people, so we all don't get along. And truthfully, some of us don't like each other because we're humans. we're just people. I cannot stand when someone's like, "Oh, you must have known Michael. He's in a wheelchair, you know." And I'm like, "Yeah, we meet at the water cooler every Thursday. Yeah, I love Michael. He's fantastic." But at the end of the day, we're all aligned in the same common goal, which is to make the industry more accessible. So at the end of the day, you put petty squabbles aside of it. I didn't like when you did this, or I didn't, you know, it made my job hard when you did this, and you put it aside and you go, okay, we're working together for the common cause. And underneath that umbrella of making the industry more inclusive for everyone, then we hope to pull in people from every minority and every background. I mean, disability is weird like that, you know? Disability is the only minority that includes every single other minority. There is not a minority on this planet that does not have disabled people in it. So it's a common ground that we all can work from and then fight for inclusiveness together.
Fact. Oh, fact.
That's solid.
Yeah.
So then, when it comes to, because I know you were saying that you would partner with developers and not necessarily tell them how to develop, but you would say that these are some things that people might be dealing with and whatnot. How does Able Gamers approach situations where a developer would like to incorporate a lot of different features, but they lack the funding or the know-how? In case like maybe like an indie developer or something like that who wants to have certain, you know, accessibility features that they saw in maybe like Spider-Man or something. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, we don't really know how they did that. Or we don't know if we have enough money to actually put into those areas. How do you guys kind of help in that regard?
Yeah, you know, that was a big concern for a lot of people. We actually met with Alex R. from Harmonix back in the Rock Band days. And, you know, he was a big supporter of Able Gamers back in the day. And, you know, he kept saying, you know, things like, you know, I love accessibility. I want people with disabilities to be included. You know, he had touch points in his life. Again, like Tess was saying earlier, like it's very much about, did you have that touch point in your life of someone who's disabled? And if you did, you kind of understand it a little bit better. And he did. He understood it. And so he wanted to help. And his way of doing that, you know, was by inviting us out to there, giving us the publicity of talking to them. And basically he pulled us, you know, into a room and talked about, you know, Rock Band and, you know, basically told the story of how he loved it, but, you know, he didn't know how much more accessible he could make it. And we were like, well, we think we could probably help with that. Cause here's, you know, a bunch of pointers that we know. And that's just from my experience and from people we've talked to and Mark's experience and people he's talked to. So it's becoming more and more about a group and talking outside of wheelhouses of your own personal experience. So he says, well, you know, the thing is, I don't know anyone that would have wanted to play Rock Band with just one button. It seems silly to me. And I go, well, I would have. And the color just drains out of his face. And he just looks at me like a ghost. And he's just like, oh, okay. So we should have led one button to play the game. Like, yeah, you could have. And then people like me could have played it. So in the coming evolutions, you saw things like the kick drum being automatic and be able to go along the timing with it without being on the scoreboard with one button. And that's because of those conversations, right? And he said, well, great. So now you've convinced me I should do it. How do I do it? So we came up with a program called Includification. It was our really silly attempt to take the buzzword of inclusion and put it with the gamification word of ication and slam them together. And it was so silly. So eventually we decided to drop that. And now we go with accessible.games, which is a URL that you can go to. If you're just an average non-developer who wants to learn more about gaming, you can go there right now. And you can literally get all the information that Able Gamers sells to developers for free. if you're an indie developer, can't afford anything as far as education, go to accessible.games. You can check out all the information we have. It's basically multiple patterns. We're talking dozens of patterns of both input and access for like challenges like we were talking about earlier. Like, all right, what about like something like a second channel? So have y'all, either one of you ever played Fortnite?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you know in Fortnite when there's someone creeping up by you and there are the little white feet that pop up to tell you that they're coming near you?
Yeah.
That's an accessibility feature that is referred to as second channel. It's basically you can hear it on one channel in your ears, but your eyes can see it on the screen, so it's a second channel of information. So having two channels or a second channel for information makes sure that someone who's deaf has visual accessibility, that someone who has a visual challenge can hear it because they're deaf, or someone who's physically disabled will have different means of knowing the same information in the same time frame so that they can react appropriately. So that kind of is something that we teach developers, where they thought it was just a cool thing to let, you know, sweaty tryhards be able to see people are creeping up on them. No, it's actually for disabled people to be able to compete. And that kind of thing is what we try to teach at accessible.games. And, you know, we do this really cool program called APX, Accessible Player Practitioners. We train people in the industry, and there's been so many cool people, my friends, that have gone through from Blizzard to Deep Silver, and we even have talked to Netflix. I mean, there's been so many NDA ones that I can't even talk about, or a golden robot will pop out of a closet and beat me to death. So this is so cool to be working with these developers in a way that I never imagined possible. So again, it comes back to that same, you know, like we're out there trying to educate. We have advocates in the field doing, you know, showmanship on Twitch and journalism and advocacy, and you attack all these points at the same time. That's how we got this wave of accessibility in the last 5 years.
Wow. That's really dope. I'm happy for you that you've been able to experience that, because when you get to work with, I don't know, I don't want to say idols, but that's really awesome, especially if you never saw that for yourself before in the space that you're in. And I think that's amazing.
That's cool. Awesome. You know, you talk about idols, and I'll tell you, Tess, the thing that was silly to me, but, you know, maybe I should say it's silly to everybody but me, but Richard Garriott followed me on Twitter. For those of you who don't
know. Nice.
He's Lord British, from Ultima Online, right? And everyone's all like, oh, your favorite follow is like, you've been followed by The Rock. Like, that's amazing. I'm like, yeah, but I got Lord British to follow me on Twitter. So, pretty big deal, being honest with you. they're just like, are you kidding? I'm like, no, that's how I grew up. I loved Ultima Online. I put so many hours into that game. And, you know, the dude that gave me fun memories in my childhood, like, just silly follows me on Twitter, and I've gotten to talk to him through a social media app. It's cool. Like, that's what I think Twitter was supposed to be, is these cool little interactions, right? Not supposed to be fights all the time. It's supposed to be interactions.
Facts.
Yes. It's much better with just awesome interactions. Do you think that, speaking of the interactions there, you know, we all kind of see the discourse when, you know, these topics are brought up. Do you think that the talking points might be a little bit easier if people knew that some of the features that they really, really like kind of came from able gamers, like the idea that you were talking about with Fortnite, with the, you know, the visual cues and the audible cues and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, if people knew that, hey, that wasn't for Ninja to get better, it's actually for other people. And you use it as well. Like,
get
you
better, Ninja.
Yeah, right. You benefit from it as well. Even though that you're able-bodied, would that be like, oh, well, I didn't, do you think that the response would be like, oh, well, I didn't know that that's where that came from, and that's a cool feature. Maybe I want to hear a little bit more about what you have to say.
I would love to tell you, yes, I wish I could. I wish. I think that there's a certain segment out there, and for the record, anyone who follows me on Twitter, number one, I apologize. Number two, if you see me interacting with people on Twitter, you know, I try with trolls. I try to educate, and I slam the ones who are rude, but I try to educate the ones who just seem to be misguided. And it's a lot of unpaid work to educate people one-on-one constantly, and it gets old. Every advocate will tell you that. I'm sure the two of you have had to educate people in your lives as well, and it's like, you can just Google this, honest to God. But, you know, you do your best to be a good person and do some education and teach them, like, hey, there's reasons for this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, here's the problem, as I found, is it takes so long. It's, you know, yeah. I can take almost any human on this earth who will listen. There are people who are just dug in because they're jerk-offs. But anyone who will listen, and I can explain to you why difficulty is accessibility and you need to understand it. But it takes a very nuanced conversation. You have to understand that all accessibility options are difficulty options. All difficulty options are accessibility options. But you have to understand it's because the health of the monsters is modified to a place where you can kill the monster before it can kill you. And that there's a time to kill ratio and that there's a time to live ratio and things that developers worry about. And that when we're saying easy mode, it's an oversimplification of a very complex topic, which is why I wrote like an entire thing on digital trends about, you know, we don't need easy mode, we need equality mode. Because essentially, the three of us, our skill sets are very, very different. You know, one mm-hmm. of us can be very good at a game, one of us can be mediocre, the other one can be very bad. I'm usually the bad one. And that's why I declared it first. Oh, there you go. I will be worse than you, I swear to goodness. And you know, it's all about those settings being able to move in a way that makes the game give each of us a similar experience of fun, challenge, and entertainment. And it's just so much of the Dark Souls crowd, because they pride themselves on, I can beat this very hard game, and that makes me special and different. They hear easy mode, and they feel threatened internally. Like, oh, you're about to make this thing that I put my pride and joy on, and you're making it where anybody can do it. I don't want that. And then there's some people that, quite honestly, I can show you tweets that broke my heart, where it's literally where people are saying, you know, I don't care if disabled people can't play. I want this to be a special thing for me. They can play a different game. And those kind of not every game's for everyone are heartbreaking. And so I don't think I could reach everyone. But to answer your question, I do think that with the right person and the right amount of time, you can educate and make most people understand. The problem is, are they willing to listen to a podcast like this and that 4-minute speech I just gave? Probably not. So, you know, the ones who already care, they probably have already listened to similar arguments. You know, you two are interested in what makes things easier and better for people, but not everybody is.
Yeah, that's true.
That is sound. And we kind of, you know, Tess, we were talking about similar things, you know, from our perspective in trying to get people to listen. And, you know, they might not say that this game isn't for you, but they'll say something like, make your own game. And it's like, sure, if I had millions of dollars or the time to learn how to, like, the idea that I can just go make a thing that I want to play right now, like, I just have the time to do that. As opposed, like, you can learn how to develop, sure, but I'm not going to make a Pokemon game tomorrow. It's just not going to, it's not going to happen. You know what I mean? So, like, yeah, I totally get that. With Able Gamers, and, you know, you partner with companies like you were saying with Xbox or Microsoft with the adaptive controller and stuff like that. Have you thought about, or has Able Gamers thought about moving into maybe inaccessibility in terms of space? Because I know Able Gamers have, I believe you have a place where people can kind of come and play games and stuff like that. But outside of that, especially this past year, people were talking about like maybe GDC talks and, you know, if E3 was a thing, going to E3 and it not being accessible to everyone because, you know, not having ramps or not having certain things. Has Able Gamers actually kind of looked into some of those things?
Yes and no. We have done what we can, both personally and as an organization. So personally, I have worked very hard with Craig Kaufman, our program director. The two guys other than Mark, who was in this thing working for years for free just to make the world a better place. Sounds altruistic. I think it's honestly because we were silly. We helped PAX in the first couple of years with their medical badges and figuring out how it's appropriate to allow people to come in. And people have consulted with us on booths and how to make things more accessible. And that, you know, carpets with giant wires under them are not cool for wheelchairs that don't see the wires coming and then almost tip over and things like that. So, we've done some things like that. But honestly, at the same time, Able Gamers has one big problem that is kind of the elephant in the room. It's that we have already taken on too much. Able Gamers is an organization that's run right now by about 13 people, 13 paid employees, and it is all I can do as the primary fundraiser, along with other people in the organization who do that for a living, to keep the ship afloat with the limited donations that come in. You don't argue. Like, I don't say, like, oh, give to us instead of St. Jude. We're the better charity. I'm not somebody who's ever played like that. I don't believe in that. What I say is that there are charities out there who do great things, and they should be funded. And we do good things. We should be funded, too. And unfortunately, there's this very much of this, only so many dollars to go around problem that charities have. And so there's only so much we can do. So there's a lot of things. I would love to get into space. I would love to get into inclusion in buildings that are game industry related. I'd like to get more into getting people who are disabled into internships and getting onto boards to help push them into making more jobs for people who are, either disabled or a minority, or preferably both. Like, there's all these things I'd like to do. I'd like to work on the FAA. The FAA has a huge problem for people with disabilities like myself. So the FAA has a regulation that wheelchairs that are powered cannot fly in the main passenger cabin, because if they were to do that, then the batteries might explode in case of a crash. I was like, but if we crash, there's a bigger problem than my wheelchair battery exploding, honestly.
Like, right, exactly. Yeah, so that's a little behind me at that point.
Fireball. I see water, giant fireball. Like, there's a lot of problems around this little gel battery going poof. Like, there's something, bigger concerns. I'd love to get into all those fights, but unfortunately, anybody who's following me lately on Twitter knows I'm talking all the time about being exhausted, and it's the way that everybody in the organization feels, because when you're an advocate, you put your all into it and you want to help as many people as you can, but you realize that there will always be more people than you can help. I will die having people who went unhelped, and because there's not enough time, you can't hire enough people, and so you just do the best you can with as much as you can, and you try to get into as many spaces as you can. But as it is, we were just a charity that we're going to focus on getting people paired with the right technology for their disability. And now we're into development and spaces and gaming and peer counseling. So,
Like, what did we do?
Yeah. Oh my God. Some mornings I wake up and I'm like, how did I get here? this happened.
Explain Twitter.
It is Twitter's fault.
It's Twitter's fault.
So I want to, before we run out of time, I really want to talk about this gala. And so this is going to be the first Able Gamers gala, is apparently a custom-built virtual world for the charity. So what are some things that people can look forward to coming up in April? It is April, the 22nd.
Coming up in April, April 22nd, we are doing the first annual virtual Able Gamers Gala, and it is going to be, think Stardew Valley meets Zoom. It's going to be a atmosphere that's 2D isometric video game like Stardew, but it has cameras and microphones like this call, so we're able to see each other, talk to each other, and has proximity chat, so that as you and I walk towards each other, away from each other, we gradually hear each other more, or distant, depending, if I make a horrible joke, Tess can be like, I'm done, and walk away, which I wouldn't blame at all. So that kind of cool, atmosphere, that's kind of what we're going for. And what we did is we basically reached out to our streamer friends and said, hey, listen, charities hit you up all the time to do streams for us, to raise money for us. And I know financially, especially during a recession, that's hard. That's real hard. And I will be asking that of you at some point this year. But for this, will you just come and hang out and be at this event and participate? And then what we're going to do is we're going to give the world a chance. Do you want to come meet your favorite creator? Well, for $25 donation, you get a ticket to this virtual event, and you can come say hi to Moistgrim, who's with Markiplier, or you could go say hi to Little Simsy, the queen of the Sims world. You could go say hi to Bruce Green or, you know, Alana Pierce or whoever else ends up showing up there that people know and love. And then, you know, for that donation, which then goes to help people with disabilities, you got to say hi to your favorite content creator. So that was the idea behind that. And then we just kind of added on cool things like there'll be a world premiere video to showing exactly how peer counseling works for able gamers. And it's going to be, I guarantee you both are going to cry because I did. It's an amazing video. It's the perspective of an actual person who has gone through the program, and it's something we have never shown before. And it focuses on the person, and that's what we're all about now. We're not about trying to solve millions of cases. We're all about one at a time changing people's lives, right? And so that's what people pay money for. I think that's what everybody donates for, is they want to change lives. So that's what this gala is all about, is giving those opportunities. We have some cool swag opportunities, merchandise that you can buy to support. You know, and all of that information is available at ablegamers.org/gala. But the event itself is just an opportunity to come together and just celebrate what it is to be a gamer. And if you have a disability, then cool. And if you don't, then maybe you can learn something.
Yeah, that's dope. That's dope.
That's pretty cool.
So that's, I thinking about that, when I first heard about it, I thought this was a cool idea because of the fact that it allows people to come. One of the big things with the pandemic, in certain cases, it kind of made things a little bit more even for folks to go to conferences and stuff like that. Since, like, for instance, E3 kind of shut down, so we had everything online. We had the Summer of Games. And so if you were covering games, but you couldn't afford to go to E3, that was where my mind went. Like, I can't fly to L.A., then I can watch it online now. But then also, if you're disabled, you know, there's having to fly there, but then also having to get, you know, being able to get in and out of the convention floor or wherever the case may be could be a struggle as well. And now that's also online, so that kind of bridges the gap there. So in this case, it makes sense with Able Gamers to actually have things online. People can kind of come and virtually be there and hang out with folks. I thought that was a really, really dope idea. Are there any features within the virtual world that you've created, similarly to what we were talking about with Fortnite, that would help someone who would maybe be hearing impaired or visually impaired or something like that?
Yeah, we're hoping that we've made it as accessible as we can for the first go around. Now, it's definitely not going to be perfect, but there's some pretty cool features built into the system. For example, when you get into the gala, you can right-click on someone and follow them around. So if you have a physical disability where moving the mouse or the keyboard is hard for you, or stamina taxing, or if you are blind and you just can't visually see them, maybe you need a bigger screen, maybe staring at that screen for a while hurts your eyeballs. You know, there are lots of scenarios where different disabilities could be affected by having to stare at the same spot in the screen for a long time, because there's not a lot that changes in this environment. It's very much focused on just the interaction points, and the background is just kind of pretty graphics. That kind of ability for someone else to lead you around, but also just be a part of the group, is great. It's an opportunity for people to enjoy the environment in the way that they see fit. You know, and so we're also going to have an ASL translator on site for anybody who might need that, in addition to lip reading on the videos. The videos are a little smaller, so we wanted to have something, a little addition to that, and captioning where we can. But it's a live event, so there's not a lot of video content, so there's not a lot of captioning. So I think a lot of it is going to be to just introducing people to an idea. So the wild and woolly thing I'm discovering about doing something that hasn't been done before is that it can be really cool. And everyone who I've introduced the idea to has had the same reaction of, oh, this is really cool. But it requires a little explaining, and it requires a little bit of education on how the thing will actually work. So, you know, if I say, hey, let's go to PAX, you know instantly what all I'm saying we should be doing. And you know the big ball of wax that I'm proposing that we go do, which is expensive and it's time consuming and it's taxing. And, you know, so you know. But with this, you know, essentially, hey, come to this virtual event for a little while. And when you're tired, bail. Until then, have some fun. You know, listen to the headliners. There's good music, good times, good people, you know. And so just getting people to kind of understand that new thing that you're building. The adoption rate is something that we're finding has been something that's taking some effort to get people to understand that it's just something anybody can participate in. So we hope that it kind of is that good alternative. You know, it's a little more accessible than, you know, for example, I've had to ride up and down on freight elevators at PAX because the regular elevators were shut down because the police were scared people would try to get in for free. So, you know, here's me with my friend Craig riding down with the chicken nuggets down to the first floor of PAX. So, you know, so... the fun things about being wheelchair disabled. There's all kinds of things like that that we're, you know, we get to avoid. But honestly, for able-bodied and disabled people alone, I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's the expense, right? It's like you go to GDC, that's $7,000. I don't care who you are, that's a lot of money. Like, yeah. You know, you go to PAX, that's $5,000 at least in Boston in March, you know? So even if you go on the cheap, you're talking maybe $1,000 if you can room with somebody who, you know, splits the bill with you. Like, you know, it's still expensive. So this is $25. So we're hoping, you know, it's not going to be a PAX. It's never going to be a huge event like that. It's just going to be something small that's, you know, good for the industry and the disability community. But I think that accessibility will really come in handy.
Well, see, you... You say that now, and you know, we were talking a little earlier about well, you guys started in one area and then you kind of blew up. So I'm just saying, you know, we're gonna put a mark here. What he said, like, hey, it's just a small thing. We're not doing a whole lot, and then before you know it, it's yeah, yeah.
It would not be the first time I've ate those words. So,
right. Goodness.
That's what happens, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna play this back too, and be like, "Hey, you remember when? Remember when you said this one thing?" Back.
I hate past me. Past me is the biggest jerk. I'm not a fan of past me.
Will there be any talks going on at the event?
No, we didn't really do talks. The only thing we did is we left space for the founder, Mark, to give an update to anyone who has donated or might be interested in donating right before the world premiere video about, you know, everything that we're up to, including a big announcement that we're making about a new program. So I'm excited for that. I'm going to do a little speech, which I probably should write at some point at the gala, just talking about, you know, thanks for people doing this thing and try and be a little inspirational in that. And other than that, it's all about the music and the good time, you know, having your character drawn in one of those silly little portraits that we're going to give you as a JPEG and going and playing trivia and trying to win some prizes and beat your favorite content creators. It's all going to be about the fun. And, you know, at the end of the day, for me, it was all about doing something cool, something different. Having something a little bit different than talks was kind of what I was going for, because I'm not a big fan of talks at PAX or GDCs. Like, I've never been a panel guy. I've been on a bunch of panels, but I'm not a big guy who goes to them. Like, you know, I'm always like, man, I've heard myself say the same thing like 9 times. So, you know, I want to see something different, play some games, you know? So there's a bunch of games you can play at the event as well, and that's what I'm hoping people focus on.
Awesome.
Yeah. I think it should be cool. It should be fun. And the problem with all things, again, if you're noticing a pattern here, we do too much in one thing. But, you know, we're also doing what we're calling Gala in a Boxes, which are boxes that you can buy to support the charity. It's $100 to buy basically a bunch of cool one-of-a-kind items that support the charity and show off what, you know, the charity swag. But we got our partners over at Warships, Twitch, and Logitech to come in and add some items. So there's an upgraded box that's $300, which is $300 is not cheap, but Logitech put about $1,200 worth of gear into it. So for anybody who's going to be a streamer, who needs an upgrade, who wants to, you know, be a higher quality equipment person, you can get this stuff for like basically 75-80% off, and your money goes to charity, not to a corporation.
Right. So that's solid.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
No, I heard I'm Logitech hoping. And I said, ooh, new mouses.
Yep. The whole package is a new mouse, new keyboard, new headset, new camera, and new headphones. All in the same box. Yeah.
That's amazing. Look at that, people. Is there going to be a raffle?
There will be all kinds of prizes and whatnot that happens at the show, so I'm hoping people will tune in. We have to be a little careful because some states get a little bit mad when you start doing things like raffles, so we have giveaways and whatnot. That we'll be doing. And we'll be on the front page of Twitch off and on. So April 22nd will be the day, and hopefully people will be entertained.
And what time will that be on the 22nd?
4 p.m. Eastern is when it all starts. And then we kind of go throughout the day, 2.5 hours of streaming, and then a world premiere video. And then we have Ninja Brian from Ninja Sex Party, the headliner of the show, doing a full set for an hour. So I'm excited. Nice. About that.
Yeah. Solid.
That's great.
That's what's up.
That's a good time.
Yeah. It does sound like good. So we're gonna be there, Tess. We're going.
I'm double booked. And so this is the thing, when the people from the other engagement realize that I've disappeared and they find me in a corner with my computer and headphones on and like, you know, those air parties, those music parties where people are listening to music and they're just going to be looking at me like, hey, what is she listening to?
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm keeping an eye on time. Because I wanted to do the bonus round, which we've been trying to do when we have our guests on, and we give them a bunch of different just questions about different things. And I typically have been waiting to the end of the podcast, so I end up pushing it past the hour. That's my fault. But I saw it this time. I was like, ooh, we're right at 50 minutes. Solid.
Here we are.
All right. So, Tess, do you have the bonus questions?
I've got the bonus questions.
Awesome.
Is it like bingo for questions? Oh, man, I'm excited.
It's just, I mean, it's a little round. And sometimes we do a rapid fire, but, you know, sometimes we, like, go really into it. So, number one, favorite video game?
Star Wars Galaxies.
Okay.
Yeah. Rest in peace. Yeah.
Okay. Genesis or Dreamcast?
Genesis with Sega Channel.
Okay.
Yeah. Listen, $15 a month, get 30 games. That 12-year-old me was like, this is the best deal that's ever been invented in the history of mankind.
Yes, that was like almost before its time. That reminds me of the what was it? The PlayStation Underground, where you get demos, and it wasn't even full games. It was just demos, and I was like, this is amazing. Like, awesome.
Yep. You know, like the little CDs, like not the great. Oh my God! Yes. Wait,
can I just say like, see, we're not. Yeah, we're not young. It's fine. It's all right.
Okay, this is a random one. Marvel versus Capcom 2 or 3?
Kenny, you're gonna have to handle that one for me.
I'm gonna go with 2. I think 2 is a much better game than 3. Though I'm probably going to get killed for it. It's just 2 is just classic. It's just a very good game. And 3 is visually better and has a lot more characters, but it's not. There's so many things wrong with 3. It would take a while. I reviewed it and it would just take a while. Go check out my review, my old review, and you'll see why. But yes, Marvel's Capcom 2 is definitely better.
I'm on 2.
That's my answer.
Favorite game genre?
Man, that's a rough one. I'm such, talk about being old, I'm such an MMO fan. I would say of all time, Ultima Online, Star Wars Galaxies, World of Warcraft is where I've sunk the most time in my lifetime because that's because I like the social connections and whatnot, but I feel like... I don't know, man. It feels like the genre, I don't want to say it's dying, but it's certainly not a focus anymore. Like we hit the golden era of World of Warcraft, and then everyone came out with WoW clones, and then the industry was like, you know what? Done with this. And then they just moved on. They were just like, the day they decided The Walking Dead was over, they're like, all right, on to vampires now. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't know why it's like that. But to me, do you two feel like that's kind of like a thing that's gone by?
The MMOs?
Yeah.
I feel like they've made a bunch of different ones, and I feel like it's just more of the same, and it's more of a money grab.
Yeah.
However they can do it. Zombie.
Mm-hmm.
And or something that's like trying to be based off of Final Fantasy, but just money, grab, and then throw some puzzles in it now. Now there's puzzles.
Yep.
I think For me, I think it's more, I mean, get that, definitely that, but then also the fact that free-to-play games kind of blew up and, you know, those are potentially a little bit more accessible financially to people. Because I know, like, one of the things that kept me from, I did play some MMOs, but I, what would keep me from playing constantly was the fact that I couldn't afford the monthly, you know, the like, my parents are like, oh, I got to pay monthly for this? Like, I just bought you Mario. Just play Mario. Like, I can't. Yeah. And so that, and then, but when you've, you know, put that next to I don't know, even, was it the Elden, not Elden, Elder Scrolls Online, the idea that you could pay once, but you get that MMO experience over and over and over without having to pay a monthly fee. I think games like that have kind of pushed the traditional MMO out. And so now you only have WoW and, I think the Final Fantasy MMO, maybe EverQuest is still going, I think. But I think like that,
there's a lot of them still going, but are they really?
Yeah, exactly. It's like they're alive, but they're not where they used to be. And I think a lot of it is, you know, you can kind of get maybe not the exact experience, but similar experiences in places where you the getting into the game is it's much easier because there's no barrier for pay. Unfortunately, what comes with that is microtransactions, and that's a whole nother.
That's another cast.
Yes, exactly.
DC or Marvel?
Marvel all the way.
Yeah, you see the Iron Man? Like,
Yeah, get back to me when DC does anything other than Batman and Superman. When they get past those two, let me know.
They bring me more Sandman. and our last question, actually, is favorite anime.
That's actually hard for me because I have not traditionally been an anime fan. I'm kind of the anti-gamer in that. I feel like almost all gamers are also into anime, but I have I was a huge into cartoons when I was younger, and then I kind of fell out of it at some point. Even don't really watch much Disney anymore. I was dating a woman about 2 years ago who made me sit down and watch like all the Ghibli movies, and I was like, "Oh, that's pretty good actually. Not bad." So like I'm a big Totoro fan now, so that's my go-to anytime anybody brings up anime. And I'm like, "Oh, I love that giant whatever the hell it was." Like, he's adorable. So, that's amazing, that's right, Totoro. Yeah. So that's me. My answer there.
Now, that's solid though. Even, you know, as someone who doesn't like anime, that's a very good one.
I don't think it's not like it so much as it's not exposed to you, but it's like also I have a lot of anime fans, and I'm guessing that's where you're going. Is YouTube do like anime with this question? But I have been very turned off by the amount of my friends who have been like, oh, they had, you know, the 12 seasons of this, and then after 12 seasons, they just ended it, and it never ends, so you'll know what happens. Like, why would I invest 120 hours in something only to be disappointed? I'm not doing that.
And that is a very smart move.
I will say
for your emotional health and well-being, sometimes just not going down the anime rabbit hole is better. I think as an anime fan, I've taken years off of my own life.
Oh no.
But see, that's why you have to have the friends who can tell you. You can just ask them, hey, does this end? And like, yes, it does. I'm like, all right, there we go.
I don't even know if anime and manga are really in the same classification in that realm. But I feel like there are some cool things I'm seeing, like Alice in Borderlands on Netflix. Like introduced me to like it's cool to see that's kind of becoming source material now for some things that turn into live action projects. And those are the kind of things where I was like as soon as I got done with the show, because I didn't want to spoil it for myself, I started reading up on like the anime version of it, and you know, what happened in the comics, and you know, did they stay true to the source material, etc. And seeing like, you know, yes they did, but also like, you know, it's done, it's finished, and I'm like, oh wow, so a story's actually done, I can actually read it. Cool.
That's awesome.
We had a Alice in Borderland discussion, actually, and that was a long discussion and a lot of emotions.
Yes.
I'm sad I missed that, and I have to fast forward to the good part though. Do you believe that the Joker card was real, or is it over?
I will let you answer that test.
Look, the truth of the matter is, I need it to be over, but like, I just want it to be over. But first of all, to make more money, no. Like, they're going to want to make more money. They got so much success out of that. And so, no, they're going to find a way to keep going. And right. In fairness, like, this is just me being like a literary critic. In fairness, it shouldn't be over because they're all dead. Okay. Yeah. This needs to be one
spoilers.
Of those things. I'm gonna use Black Mirror here. I don't know if you watched Black Mirror, but there's that one episode of Black Mirror where the guy, like, you go through the episode of him being in the haunted house and all that stuff, but he's dead. He actually died at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And so all of that other stuff was just chemical, you know, the electrical signals in his brain going through all that stuff. But he was, and I kind of feel like that's really where we need to be. They need to be in perpetual, like continuation of life, but being actually dead. Like they need to be recycled as if they're in a game.
Recycled in a game, yeah. Unless they're going to pull some kind of like altered carbon shenanigans of pulling the CD drive out. That's all I can think of. Yeah. Like, I didn't, so on streams and in podcasts, I'm animated because I'm amping up my personality to, like, you know, be entertaining. And in real life, I'm kind of more muted. I don't usually laugh out loud at shows and get, like, yell at the screen. But at that, I was like, no, when I saw the Joker card, I was like, are you, like, you had the ending. Why? Why?
Yeah, why?
I felt the same way. And it's like, I get what you're saying, Tess, and I'm like, dang, does it have to be bleak? Can it not just, like, because they, you know, and since we're spoiling it, these people don't seem to die. Like, they just take all sides of damage. And I'm just like, if they're not going to die, it's just, right, plot armor. If they're just not going to die, then let them have a good ending. Don't tease me with, oh, she got shot a million times, all in the face, but she's alive somehow. And then you tell me, oh, it didn't happen. Like, no. So, but I think that's what's going to happen. Or either they were in a like a purgatory type of thing, or essentially that what is happening is they're actually in another game. So the Joker card is them being back in that world and thinking that everything's done when it isn't. Which that in and of itself would be interesting because it's like, oh, you had one more game, you had a final boss type of thing, versus it recycling again. Because at the very least, if it's like that, there's some forward progression. You know what I mean? I don't want them to keep looping back and back and, you know, so we'll see. Hopefully it does, you know, Netflix and, you know, allows it to end. But yeah, I would be sad because I was on the opposite end when we were talking about it. I was like, this is just shenanigans. I don't understand why these people won't die. There's no, and not that I wanted them to die, but I'm like, there's no stakes. Like, I'm like, there's no stakes. My favorite died. And I'm like, oh wait, no, they're fine. They're okay.
Yeah.
And, oh, he died. Like, oh no, he's good too. Like so they're both alive. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I never want my favorite characters to die, but I do agree with you on the stakes of a show. Like, that was what sold me so hard on the Game of Thrones TV adaptation was when they immediately dropped off Ned. Like, as soon as that happened, I was like, okay, this show is willing to kill main characters. At that point, okay, that means that there actually are stakes that I actually do have to pay attention. Because, I mean, again, I talk about stakes and we're running on time, so we can't go on this forever, but it's like any time that a show immediately shows me that no matter what you're throwing at the main protagonist, there's no way they die, then I just start losing interest because I'm like, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how bad this looks. And, whatever, he's getting out of it. So,
yeah. Yeah. And that's how I was feeling. Right.
Yeah. Oh, never man. So much have I wanted my favorite character, Sesshomaru, to die. Bye.
Well, you want to die for different reasons. That's totally different. That's different. But yes, Stephen, thanks for joining us. We had a great time talking to you. about Able Gamers and about the gala that's happening on April 22nd at 4 p.m. Eastern, everybody. Definitely go get your tickets and or the swag bags or, you know, whatever, the boxes. The boxes. And be a part of this first event. I'm definitely going to be there. Tess is going to be there. So, you know, we want you guys there as well. And again, you know, thanks for hanging out with us and, you know, answering our questions and whatnot. You taught me a lot about Able Gamers through not just through Twitter, but through this interview. And hopefully some people, the people who are listening will, you know, do what they will with this information. If you're listening on YouTube, feel free to subscribe and hit that notification bell so you're up on all the new content. If you're listening on iTunes, all of them just fell out of my head. Spotify, add us to your RSS feed, subscribe. So you know when we're dropping new episodes. We have a lot more guests coming out this year. The previous episode, I wanted to do an update. So the previous episode, we were talking about the graphic novel Darla, and it actually was funded. So everybody who listened to the last episode, it got funded. So his graphic novel is going to be dropping. I don't have the date, actually. Sorry, my brain is doing this thing. It's been a long day.
You've been hanging out with me.
I guess I don't know. You know what it is? It's 4 o'clock and I'm breaking the fourth wall, people. It's 4 o'clock and I'm usually working at this point, and we usually do the cast a little bit later. And so my brain is a little bit better. But yeah,
my bad audience. I broke your host. I'm sorry. I gotta do this earlier. I can't. I'm sorry. I broke him. I'm so sorry.
Oh my gosh, my whole spiel. You know what?
We're gonna reboot him, and we're gonna bring him back for the next season. It'll be fine. Just like nothing ever happened.
Oh my gosh.
That's it, y'all. Remember to wash your hands, wash your faces, and your butts.
Yes,
wash your butts. Wear your mask. Definitely.
Wash your butt. And, your mask and your butt. Yes.
Yes. Wait, not in that order, though. Not in that order. I'm not in that order, though. Yeah.
But yeah, thanks, guys, hanging out with us. We hope to see you next week. Wear your masks. COVID's still a thing. And be kind, everybody. #don't be a dick. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.